I fell into a ring of fire. I fell in.
Let's see it.
When you kiss me, fever, when you hold me tight. Fever.
Oh, I wish I was in Wellington. The wind is
coming. Welcome to Fever FM. Tonight we're talking the game versus Newcastle Jets in Newcastle. I'm joined by Dale and Dave. Dave, why do we struggle against the Jets?
I wish I knew. Maybe it's because I went there once and we lost 5-0 and then I've never been back. Maybe that's the whole reason.
Oh, genuinely, that makes as much sense as anything. I think we can wrap this pot up. Let's go home, guys. Dale, what is it about the Jets that seems to be our kryptonite, not just this season?
Had a win and a draw and a loss against them, so it's not like diabolically bad. I feel like over the course, we probably win more games than we lose against them, don't we? But I mean, I guess they are, well, for the most recent part, a lower half side, so perhaps that doesn't kind of affect it. But I don't know, maybe is it the extra travel, the extra 3 hours on a bus? I don't know. Not sure.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's get into the details of it. The team for the for this game was Paulson, Payne, Sermon, Wooten, Sutton, Rufa, Salas, Alte, Crave, Old, and Barbarousis. No real surprises there. Sutton obviously keeping his spot. He's been playing pretty well. Alte and Salas in there. Apart from that, no surprises, gents.
No, I think it's hard to be surprised by a Chiefy lineup these days where, he's got a few players he likes to rotate in and out there, and I think that's just the reality of the situation. All of those players are more than capable of being starting players, and yeah, it is a classic Chiefy lineup, but classic Chiefy lineups have some tweaks.
That is very true. We did see quite a standard classic Chiefy fairly defensive setup. We saw Krajev maintaining that very, very ethereal floating role that he's done. Dale?
I might need to get a definition of ethereal because it's not in my vocab. He's had a pretty strong season, I think, by most measures. He's always looked a little bit dangerous, putting defences and defenses in second minds, and I think one of the good things he does is when we're playing out from the back and perhaps we're getting pressed and we look a little bit longer, he's the kind of one that is that target outlet. He's the one that they try hit on the fly, and he kind of does these little side volleys onto someone running past, and he creates that overload sometimes in midfield. So yeah, and I thought he's been pretty good and had another decent game again today. Well, not today. God, it's been like 5 days. Friday.
Yep, Friday. This was a very... this wasn't our best half of football, Dave. How would you summarise this?
Yeah, I think you're being pretty generous there. I don't know. It's not the first time we've looked worse in the first half than the second, right? I think there's something about us building into games. But I do think this looked particularly poor, I guess. But it did seem to be balanced out by a significantly better second half where we did look much more dominant. So I don't know whether it's a tactical thing where we do look to maybe press the game a little less in that first half, look to try and settle, and we struggle to do so, or exactly what it is. But we definitely seem to be a better second half team and maybe even better kind of later in both halves as well. We seem to kind of thrive on that end of the game, end of the half pressure, I guess, for lack of a better term. Whether I like that, I don't know. It certainly is a good way to get the heart rate up as a fan. I would much rather we just went out there and played some great football in the first 15 minutes and put three on them. But that doesn't seem to be the way we set up. And it does seem to be the style we want to play, is to wait, be patient, and then take our chances quickly towards the end of halves.
There's a stat that the commentators like pulling out normally around the Knicks scoring first. Well, basically, we go on to win when we score first, and we don't tend to concede first at all. This, unfortunately, wasn't quite true of this game. Dale, you being the goalkeeper's representative from the union today and telling us how that wasn't just a horrible mistake?
Yeah, I'm kind of like in slightly two minds about it. I think in some ways I think he's desperately unlucky that it got directed back towards goal. I think, yeah, for him, I think he was let down by our defence to get into that kind of dangerous position, and the cutback is always going to be tricky. And when I guess you're sort of that close-ish to goal, your actions are always going to be, you know, somewhat limited just because of the distance from the action that there is. And in another, you know, another world, and I think it even happened later in the game, almost an exact carbon copy where he went low down and the ball kind of just fell to him. He got a palm to it and it kind of fell to him, whereas this one, you know, he was kind of reaching, and somehow, I'm not really sure how it ended in the back of the net, but it did. So, yeah, I'm sure he has high expectations for himself, so I was pretty disappointed that it went in. But I think perhaps some of the reaction from people about it has been excessive and well over the top for what it was.
Yeah, I don't think it's as much of a howler as some people have made out. I think, you know, there's an element of he would have loved to have done better, but I agree. I think there's also an element of just getting very, very unlucky with this. I think 9 times out of 10, this goes much, much better for him. And this is just the one time where it went a lot worse. And I can't quite figure out the angle it managed to deflect off him at. But, you know, as soon as that happens, it's no saving it.
Yeah, my read of it was that he didn't expect it that close to him. He kind of almost dived over the top and it just came out from underneath the underside of his arm almost. We talked about this earlier in the season that, you know, a young defence and a young goalkeeper, we're going to see the odd issue. This has kind of been his first one that I can think of. Oh, no, there was one right towards the beginning of the season where he didn't do so well, and I can't remember what exactly it was. But if we're talking the grand scheme of things, gents, it's two mistakes as an A-League keeper and a, you know, debut, you know, first season. That's not bad, is it?
Yeah, I can think of at least two others. One, I think, was that Newcastle game at home where we lost 3-0, where he dropped a cross and fell to one of their players who tapped it in. And then there's the Melbourne City goal a few weeks ago where he kind of came for a cross and missed it, and they had a tap in it, or a free header at the back post. So there's been a few. Every keeper will have at least some. So that's just the nature of the game. Yeah, I think if we, you know, if we took a striker at choice, say Costa, even in this game, probably had more than 3 very good misses that, you know, it's probably somewhat equivalent to Alex Paulson's over the whole season. You know, just because it's at one end, it gets amplified much more than, you know, Costa having a header from 2 yards out and somehow putting it over the post and having a couple other very good chances. So the aspects of being a goalkeeper is they tend to get amplified a lot more than other parts of the game.
Yeah, and I think for some context as well, if we were to look at, say, the best 10 saves of the season and the worst 10 goalkeeping mistakes of the season, I think we all know that Paulson would feature more in the saves of the season than he would mistakes of the season. You know, he's had a few mistakes for sure, but I think across the league, he certainly isn't featuring in the worst of them. You know, there are some pretty horrendous goalkeeping mistakes. And for such a young keeper, you know, just breaking out in the league, he's really not at the pointy end of the mistakes, that's for sure, whereas he is making some pretty spectacular saves.
For all my doom and gloom about this first half, and I think our collective doom and gloom, there were some opportunities. It seemed to be a bit of you take it, you have a go, we'll have a go, you have a go. We saw a couple of bring down them volleys, actually, one from Costa, one from Alex Rufer. Rufer's one was particularly decent. I didn't get a good look at Costa's one. So there were opportunities. We just weren't taking them. This is kind of, to me, the difference between Knicks this first half and throughout the rest of the season. Those chances, we have tended to be really quite ruthless.
Yeah, that first half was quite a bit strange in some ways. Like, it felt a very sloppy performance. I thought it was sloppy. Yeah, I think we gave away a lot of possession in some poor areas, and you know they had, you know, I think probably if you exclude the goal, probably two other very good chances. I think, yeah, there was that one that hit the crossbar from Stamatolopoulos. Someone's going to help me there.
Stamatolopoulos.
That's it. I was missing a couple of letters in there somewhere, where he kind of had that cut back and it fell back to him, and he hit the crossbar from a tight angle. And then the one just before halftime where, Paulson comes up with a big save at a very important time of the game as well. You know, and for us, yeah, I think our chances were less clear in that first half. They were kind of a little bit sort of more a bit further out, sort of edge of the box type chances that, for the most part, you don't really score unless you're getting quite lucky.
Yeah, we did see at the other end, Ryan Scott. I mean, he's a good keeper, but jeebus, this was one of the games the best games I can remember him playing. He made a couple of really good saves to keep us out. The one actually Sutts hit right at the beginning of the second half that he just smashed from a mile away. For all money, I thought that was just going in, and Scott made this look pretty easy. It's got to be so frustrating when you're not getting great opportunities, and even when you do hit an absolute blinder, he makes it just look like it's nothing.
He's a strange one. I think he's very much one of those shot stopper keepers. Like anything other than diving, he's not particularly great at. You know, doesn't really play out ball well. Pretty poor on crosses. Like the save that really got me was the one, I think it was in the second half, and OVH put across to, I think, Old at the back post, and Old is just sliding it into the back post, and he just sticks out a boot, and it just hits him. Like, there's no kind of goalkeeping technique to it. It's just Scott's just thrown out a boot, and it's just hit him with no real, skill or anything. It's just put it there, and it has happened to hit him, and it's stayed, and that's the kind of one that really got me.
It's a pretty good point. There obviously was a pretty good team talk from Chiefy and some of the staff, because they did come out pretty sharpish and start getting about their work. We saw David Ball and Van Haddam come on for Alte and Salas. For me, that Salas sub could have come sooner. His heavy touches that we were putting down to the wet weather the previous game, they continued in this. It was a bit worrying, wasn't it? See someone of that pedigree just making those kind of basic mistakes. Dave, or is this just on me being a bit of a pessimist?
I mean, you are a pessimist, but I also think it wasn't just him. I think there were a lot of kind of lazy touches. I think with Salas as well, we've kind of seen flashes of him play well and a lot of him play not so well. So it's hard to say what his kind of 90 minutes looks like, because we really haven't seen him put together a complete 90 minutes yet. We've seen bits and pieces. I think clearly his touch is one of the problematic parts of his game, but he also does show, you know, flashes of something good every now and again, and certainly the kind of passion's there, and there is some skills. So if he can put it all together, he could be fantastic, but whether or not he'll show enough before the season's over, I don't know.
Dale, these were some bold substitutions at halftime, bringing David Ball and Van Haddam on for two of your defensive midfielders. What did you make of this?
On reflection, it worked out well. It worked out better the second half than it did the first, didn't it? Yeah, I thought we were kind of a very different side that second half, and absolutely battered to them to the extent that we should have won that game about three times over. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what it was, or whether it was just a G up at halftime, or you know, the change in personnel, some of it, or a bit of a combination of both. But we just made, because in the second half we just looked a lot more composed with the ball, moved it better, didn't lose it as much in bad areas, and for most part cut them open and got into the attacking third just about every time we had possession.
It certainly felt like that midfield became a lot more open for us to play through. I don't know whether to put it down to just having, I guess, five players who are capable of moving the ball, playing with the ball, kind of does make it a little bit more aggressive. We saw opportunities falling to Benold again, Costa. I can't remember how many opportunities they had. Costa, a little unlucky with his one header, and then finally getting it, of all opportunities, another header, and making no bones about it. It was probably the easiest header he's going to get in his lifetime, I think, wouldn't it be?
Yeah, I guess the, you know, we were creating the chances, but I guess the worrying thing for me, right, is this halftime talk probably writes itself to some extent, right? You were down by a goal. You needed 3 points to stay in the hunt for the Premier's plate for the first time in your club's history, right? So this is a classic. If you want to be in with a shot at this, you got to go out there and win this in the next 45. You know, it's not a hard thing to sell to your players. They knew how much was on the line here. And we're a team that thrives off creating a very small number of good chances, right? And we just weren't that clinical at finishing them. You know, we made the small number of good chances we needed to win this game, and we just couldn't finish them. And there's, you know, you can put some of it down to being unlucky, and, you know, some of it down to the keeper having a bit of a blinder or whatever, but there was more than enough there for us to win this, and we didn't really finish it the way we should have, right? You know, we just weren't as clinical as we should, and I don't know how that's going to play out come finals football. But that's the thing that worries me here, is this was your do or die moment, and we kind of whimpered our way through it a little bit.
Yeah, I had a bit of a look back at the stats every game. This is just the third time in a game where we had more shots in the opposition, a higher expected goals in the opposition, and more big chances in the opposition. So it doesn't happen that often that we batter teams on all three sort of attacking criteria, and the other teams, other goals, other results was a win and a draw. So come away from a draw was pretty disappointing. You know, we had eight big chances in that game. That's more than any other game we've had this season. And we only got one goal out of an XG of 3.84, which in any other game, we would have scored, you know, five goals in that game based on our efficiency. And I kind of get your point, Dave, but this is mostly a fairly significant outlier in the course of our season. And I know it's kind of, you know, frustrating because of where the season's at, but if you had this game in the second round rather than the second to last round, you'd probably go, yeah, one of those games, you know, in another game we'll not deserve it and get something out of it, and it evens out. So
100%.
And we did.
Yeah, we can probably go back to another game where exactly the opposite has happened to us, and we've, yeah, I think back to that Adelaide 2-2 away from home, where they hit the bar a couple of times and had some pretty good chances, and we nicked away a 2-2 draw away from home fairly undeservedly.
Wasn't there a game against Sydney as well?
Possibly, I don't know.
That we didn't even get a shot on goal?
Oh, victory in the second. Yeah, but, you know, we still created a good chance for the own goal, though. That was victory in the second round, maybe. Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a significant outlier from the rest of our games. So, you know, if we had two or three of these in a row, then perhaps you'd be, a bit more concerned. Well, at least I might be.
Yeah, I guess on the plus side, obviously, the step up was good. The lack of clinicalness, I'm going to use that word and pretend that it is a word, was an issue. We have seen Costa kind of hit these patches before. The same with David. Obviously, David Ball has been somewhat bereft when it comes to scoring. We know that Krajev doesn't score many. Old is still, he's starting to score the odd one or two, and Van Haddam really isn't kind of hitting those traps. Is this just that we're seeing the accumulation of these, what's the opposite of profligate? These sorts of strikers that, or attacking players that don't tend to score a lot and just kind of rely on the sum of the parts kind of proving their worth. Is it just that we're going to get these games?
Yeah, last week we talked about, you know, what players would be in the A-League team of the year. And I think this probably highlights, you know, we don't really have lots of standout, you know, marquee player. You know, like every other team, you know, even like Perth, you know, like Taggart, you could, if you're best player, you could easily say that. I think if you ask, you know, 10 people who are the best player this season, you'd probably get 4 or 5 different answers, I think. And I certainly, you know, the Phoenix sent around an email today about voting for, you know, players of the year, and you could make a case for a good number of them. So I think that's, you know, where I think what you say is kind of correct, in that we are a bit more of the sum of our parts rather than kind of having a leading talisman who is grabbing the game every week, like, you know, a Davila for MacArthur or Arslan for Melbourne City. I think, you know, we're much more of a kind of, I don't know, multi-dimensional side. I don't know if that's quite the right kind of...
One other positive, Dave, Oscar Zavada getting 10 minutes and making an absolute bloody nuisance of himself, as we hoped he would.
Yeah, I think he looked all right. It's a hard one, though, because it's such a mixed blessing having him back, because it does suddenly make him an option. And I've long said I think we play better without him on the field this season. So much as I'm not going to be upset he's back, I also think it throws a spanner in the works that might, you know, mess things up more than it adds to it, maybe, come finals football. I don't know. We'll see how it all plays out. He might be exactly what we need in those games. But part of me thinks we've had a formula that's working, and sadly for him, he wasn't part of the formula. But now we've got him back, and he's the sort of guy who's going to expect to play, and he's good enough quality that I think they will give him minutes. So hopefully he makes of those minutes something good.
Well, we did see him creating the final opportunity. Should we call it that? By picking up one of the defenders and giving him a wee shove, such that his hand hit the ball in the penalty box. For me, this seemed pretty nailed on push, but the VAR didn't pick it. Am I just being a little bit jumping on what the Defenders Union or something? But it looked quite blatant, the shove.
Oh, I agree. I'm surprised it didn't get looked at, because, you know, I think the defender, as far as I can recall, was kind of in the air or about to jump in the air as Zawada kind of put his hands on him. And, it, you know, for people to say, oh, you know, yeah, you need to be stronger off the ball and stuff like that, when you're preparing to jump, you have nothing to brace yourself to, you know, to compete physically with players. You know, you're kind of a bit, you know, vulnerable. I mean, it definitely looked like a wee push. I mean, the whole incident was bizarre, because Fagani just basically made no call. I don't know if he got a call from someone on the sideline, because he certainly didn't call it at the time. So I'm not exactly sure how that processed out. But this reminds me of a goal maybe a couple of seasons ago. I think where Tim Payne may have got pushed by Mitchell Duke, I'm going to say, for the Wanderers. And exact same thing. He got pushed. He was jumping up in the air, got pushed out of the way, and then Duke controls and scores. And exactly kind of similar, where I think this should be sort of, yeah, called back. I think as soon as you put your hands on with a pushing movement that moves a player, even just in this kind of instance, even if it's 10 centimetres, that can change quite a big aspect about how the rest of that sequence plays out.
Yeah. I think if that's a defender pushing a striker, you're calling for a penalty for the push, right? I think it's a foul either way. But yeah, I think the nature of the game is you maybe see that called more one way than the other, just because of the defender versus attacker kind of advantage, for lack of a better term.
Yeah, it did bring us up to the traditional Phoenix moment of, we now need to score with a penalty. Costa picked up the ball and I assume was wanting to take it, but Roofs overruled him. There's been some debate about whether he should have. I am a little bemused about this, as I think he scored all three that he'd taken, gents. Is this just a bit of someone overreacting?
Oh, it's just people looking for someone to blame, right?
Yeah, I have a funny feeling this sequence has played out in another penalty as well, where Costa's picked up the ball. And I don't know if it's a deliberate kind of ploy to try throw keepers off about who's going to take it, or them go look at their drink bottle about Costa, where does he go? And then you change it, and then there's no chance to like remember what Rufa does or something like that. But there's definitely been a sequence where Costa's picked up the ball after some long delay, and then Rufa comes in and takes it and, you know, takes the penalty.
I hadn't thought of that, to be quite honest, but it seemed fairly straightforward. I was pretty sure that there was one where Costa said that, you know, he wanted to take it, but Roof's up the last one, so... And he's a skipper. But unfortunately, he has just not curled it enough to bring it inside the inside of that post and has just skimmed the outside. This kind of blows, eh, gents? Especially after we'd gotten fortunate, shall we say, with the Jets' goal at the other end being ruled off for offside, which was pretty close too. I was sweating on that a bit.
It was closer than I thought at the time, that's for sure. I thought he was at least 2 metres off when that play continued. So to see how close it actually was somewhat concerning at the time as well.
Yeah, the crowd weren't being convinced. They were certainly not enjoying the referee's performance for that last couple of minutes at the least. Dave, we've talked about that pen and the offside. You thought it was, what did you think? Fairly straightforward?
Yeah, it was offside. It was, as you say, tighter than I thought, but no, I think it's the right call. Yeah, I think the pen, the push was an issue, but I wish that had gone in. It's that simple.
Yep. Yeah, yep. Yeah, you wouldn't, if it had gone in, you wouldn't have been complaining.
No, never.
I think we talked, was it last week or the second week, about how there's still enough time in this league for another twist, and I didn't have Alex Reefer missing a 96th minute penalty away to Newcastle on my top 10 things that could happen. You know, he looked very comfortable in his other ones. Game of inches, right? You know, put it 10 centimetres left and it goes in off the post and no one's been an eyelid. But one thing I wanted to touch on is I saw a lot of people say, oh man, Zawada should have been taking it. Do you know what? Zawada had two touches when he was on and they were both with his head. Are you really going to back someone who's been out for 8 weeks with their first touch at the penalty spot? It hasn't exactly been the most accurate on penalties as well. So I think Rufus stepping up is exactly what you want someone in leadership to do, right? Is not shy away from, you know, the spotlight or moments of pressure. And, you know, whoever else took it could quite have easily missed it as well. The form that Ryan Scott was in, that, you know, there's not a guarantee that anyone else would have scored that penalty either.
I think it wasn't a bad miss either. I would put it down in the good miss category. He's hit it with confidence. He's hit it cleanly, and it has come off the upright. It's, you know, as far as misses go, that's not horrible.
And a height that probably wasn't going to be savable if it was inside the post. Yeah, even if he did get it on it, would the keeper have had it covered? And I don't think he would have.
So that 1-1 draw has really set the cat amongst the pigeons, unfortunately, meaning that the Mariners, all they have to do is get a draw and a win from their next two league games. They were due to play Adelaide this weekend, but on the way back from Kyrgyzstan, it turns out there was the mother of all storms through the Middle East, where Dubai Airport flooded and storms managed to tear down a couple of buildings. It was pretty biblical. If you haven't seen it, by all means, go and jump online. Meaning they missed their connecting flight and were delayed by something like 14 hours at a minimum. And so I believe the players' union said that they can't play or something.
The rumor was floating around, I think, on Friday that they were going to get a later flight that was going to go via Istanbul and Thailand or something and deliver them Friday night ahead of a Sunday game. But I think it turns out that didn't eventuate because it feels like I think they only got back on Sunday or even maybe Monday morning.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure exactly what their travel agent was doing because it's almost like 4-5 days to find flights home, which doesn't seem to be that tricky. I don't know. Maybe I'm just being ignorant of travel when Dubai is underwater. But yeah, it was a strange one because we're all going, yes, they're going to get there a bit later. This is our chance to, shit, the game's been delayed. And now that good piece of news or our little slice of hope has kind of been squashed quite quickly now with the delayed game.
Yeah, I wonder if actually part of it might have been an active decision once the decision had been made to delay the game rather than spending a lot of hours on weird transfers of flights through airports. The decision was made to park up in a hotel for a couple of days instead. Better to have players sleeping in beds and with a gym available and whatever, than spending 40 hours transferring around airports to go through some random connections that a travel agent was sorting out for them. But that's only a guess. They certainly would have still been dealing with some pretty rubbish travel arrangements regardless. But at the point you didn't need to rush to get home, I do wonder if a decision was made to actually let's go sleep in a hotel rather than sitting in an airport trying to rush.
Yeah, I did see that. I think they eventually went home via South Korea and apparently had a 16-hour layover there. So they didn't exactly get a much better treatment on the way back. But
unfortunately, the timing has ruined that for us. So that their game versus Adelaide has been postponed till after the rest of their games. So they are still getting, I believe, 4 games in 2 weeks. It's just that it's not 4 games in 2 weeks after travelling back from Kyrgyzstan on a DC-3. Yeah. So it's disappointing, but it's still a tough ask for them. It got somewhat tougher. I guess we're going to talk about this now. One of their players has been arrested and charged with numerous offences that I don't really want to get into because I don't even want to say the words, but let's just say he could do some serious prison time for Angel Torres' player, and he has been stood down. Not totally sure whether it's league requirements at the moment or the Mariners. There's been rumours that it's league requirements that if someone's facing a serious charge, they have to stand down. But that has taken their top goal scorer out of the rest of their season. Gents, the Lord giveth, the Lord taketh away.
I'm trying to work out how to talk about it without being disrespectful to a victim. Yeah, also what I wouldn't have had on my top five things of twists that were going to happen at the end of the season. I mean, it's going to be real interesting about how this plays out dynamically within the squad, whether it galvanizes a side or what, or falls apart or doesn't do anything. I mean, who knows?
Yeah, that's exactly right. I think, regardless of the situation for that one player, I think the rest of the club are facing a game missing a player through whatever reason, right? So it's going to be a tough ask anyway. But as you say, it could be the reason that galvanizes them together, or it could equally be the cause of some, not infighting, but I guess unrest within the club about, how it's been dealt with internally, what that culture's like, all of that kind of stuff will be on their minds. It's certainly not going to be a relaxing, restful lead into this game that they've got to play. And then, as you say, they've got a congested schedule. And so it's just going to be an extra thing that the rest of the players are having to face. And as a club, I mean, I'm sure there are some people in some senior positions also having to manage various competing things now that they probably weren't planning on dealing with. So it'll be interesting for them. But I guess just to go back to us, it makes the equation for this weekend relatively simple. If they lose their game and we win ours, we win the plate. Obviously it's not entirely within our own hands, but we need to go out there and get 3 points. And if at the same exact time the Mariners are losing a game to the Jets, we win. It's pretty simple, isn't it?
When you put it like that. But obviously we need to get into this next game versus MacArthur that's had a bit of a turn up as well. So they say good things happen in threes, but weird things seem to happen in fours. So we've had the Dubai rainstorm from the basically biblical levels. We've had the penalty miss in the 96th minute, then the Angel Torres situation. Now, MacArthur's last game, they had 2 red cards given to them. One to our beloved Tommy Smith. That will stand. But the Ivan Viduka one, which was a straight red in the 37th minute. I should add that MacArthur did actually still win that game, even with 2 reds. So they're still well in the hunt for that, for those top playoff spots. Can someone please explain to me what the hell has happened with that Viduka red card?
I mean, I don't think it's a red card for starters, but my understanding, and this kind of relates to that Riley Foster incident, is once a referee's made a call, the only way to have that overturned is for the MRP, whatever, the match review panel, to come to conclusion that no referee could have decided that any card was an appropriate response to that tackle. So it doesn't mean it has to be red, but it needed to be yellow. And I can see how you get a yellow to that point. You know, you're kind of a bit late, it studs into an ankle. It's not there's not excessive force, but you can see how you get to kind of a reckless kind of level. So I'm real intrigued how that happened, because I can think of a few instances where we haven't got off because I'm thinking that Rufa one against MacArthur, where he falls over and happens to kick a guy running past him a couple of seasons ago. He got sent off. He still had to serve a one-match ban, I think, because they said, you know, he could be given a yellow card at the time or something like that. So there just seems to be some inconsistency here, maybe there's some nuance that I'm not quite grasping with.
No, I don't think so. I think you've explained it perfectly, for my opinion. I completely agree. I don't think it should have been a red card, but the match review panel, the threshold is whether or not any card could have been awarded, and a yellow card absolutely could have been awarded for this. And so I think it's I'm gonna use the word travesty that this is the one they've decided to say, we're going to bend our rules to let this guy off. Because I think there's, as you say, numerous other examples, not just for the Phoenix, but for other clubs as well, of very soft red cards that probably, if we were trying to be a bit lenient, we should have been not making suspensions be served for those as well. And if we're suddenly deciding that that's the way we want to play this now, not only this far through the league having made these sorts of decisions, but randomly at this point, this late in the season, seems crazy to me. I think the only possible nuance, and again, there's other examples of this, so I don't accept this as being the time to suddenly set a precedent around this, but there's an argument that the VAR shouldn't have got involved here because there wasn't a clear and obvious error. And so this might be that threshold of VAR has made a mistake by involving themselves, and so they're looking at it through that lens. But again, this isn't the first time that's happened either. So I don't think that should be the deciding factor here, because the card got awarded, the MRP and the any card thing should be what was applied. But I do think a discussion could certainly be had about whether VAR should be getting involved in ones like these, because I don't think so.
The recipient of this tackle, Joe Lolly, was equally adamant that it wasn't a red card. He's actually kind of come out and said that the number of red cards we've had in the league is just a bit ridiculous.
I mean, he did go down very quickly after contact, so perhaps he might want to look at his own behaviour in the instance in the incident.
In fairness, though, he does say it before the card is awarded. When VAR is looking at it, you can see in the footage, because I was watching this game live. He is saying that VAR shouldn't be looking at it. I think he wanted a yellow to be awarded for sure. I thought he saw an opportunity to get a card, but he didn't think that this was VARable. And yeah, so I will defend him slightly on that, but equally, he's hardly covered himself in glory with some of his own tackles. So,
Joe Lawley make a tackle? Jesus, you've been watching that game pretty hard, Dave. Doesn't make many of them. That kind of brings us to the end of the men's section. Obviously, the game coming up is on Saturday at the unusual time of 7:15 versus MacArthur at the stadium. Please get along to that. We do have some more news as well. This time on the women's side, Macy Fraser has had an offer put to her from the NWSL side, the Utah Royals, which sounds like it broke a whole bunch of financial records. I'm not really familiar with them, to be honest, but that's a big move for her, gents. Dave, the financial side of it was the money that big?
It set a league record, right? But I don't think we've been given the exact number. All we've heard is that it's a, I believe, six-figure sum. So it's hardly, you know, huge. But the reality is that says a lot about women's football, right? That's a record-breaking offer. I think that the previous record was understood to be 100K, and this beats that. Now, that's not insignificant money, and it's great to see a Kiwi player breaking that record, but it does show you just how disparate the game is when that's the league record for the women's league compared to some of the money that's thrown around on, you know, youth players in the men's league.
Dale, Dave's righteous chat aside, how big a move is this for Macy?
I am somewhat surprised, perhaps not the right word, that it came so early. I kind of expected another year before an overseas club might come in. So yeah, I mean, it's great for, well, great for her, and it's, you know, sort of joining Millie Clegg over there, and it certainly shows that, you know, American sides are looking down here for younger talents. So I guess that probably bodes well for the potential upcoming production line that might be coming out of the women's side through the club.
Yeah, I think that this is, I mean, it's a bit of a surprise that it's kind of come quite so early, but definitely a, you know, she's shown that there's a lot of potential there and a lot of upside, technically very skilled. I'm really quite stoked for her and stoked for the club. There has been a bit of grumbling about, you know, about her going, but I think that that's just the stupidest thing I've heard.
Yeah, well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is what football is. Buy and sell players as you need. I think, you know, perhaps one of the good things for her is she's going into a team that's struggling. I mean, in some ways that's kind of bad but good. Like, you know, she might get a good chance of getting some minutes in a team because they're struggling, as opposed to a team that's flying. And, you know, they certainly talked about her having an instant impact. So I'm not sure they've, you know, bought her just for, you know, future years, but perhaps hopefully sometime in the immediate future.
Well, we'll follow that. We'll start following the Utah Royals now. Our first little foray into the NWSL for me, at least. And obviously we'll have our expert, Helena back, hopefully next week to give us a little more insight into it. We'll wrap it up there, gents. Thank you for, having we chat with me about this. Dear listeners, don't forget that the next game is on Saturday, 7:15 at the stadium, final game of the regular season. As David said before, win against MacArthur, and if the Mariners lose against the Jets, the Premier's plate is ours. That will be quite the 16-year journey for most of us here. Thanks for listening. See you at the stadium. Hopefully chat next time about 3 points and a first bit of silverware. See you then.